So welcome, here today with Lynn and Rose. Hi, Lynn. Hi, Rose.
Hello.
We were discussing in the WhatsApp group, the graduate program WhatsApp group, about various topics that we'd like to discuss. And one of them that came up was the the beautiful Indian saint that is and was Sri Anandamayi Ma, or Ma as she was known. So if you don't know her at all, haven't encountered her, then when we put this video up, I'll see if we can put a little link to a little page about her life and who and what she was physically, at least, you know, so energetically, very much still here, and I'm sure here with us today during this. So the three of us wanted to get online and just talk through some experiences, connections, and intuitions about Ma, and just really to celebrate her as well. I feel, you know, that feels like a nice thing to do. If just in case you don't know, she was born in Bangladesh and in 1896, and she was 82 years old when she took Mahasamadhi, which, if you don't know what that means, it just means when a saint or a teacher basically leaves their body for the last time, Maha being great or final, and Samadhi being merging into the oneness, so to speak. So she lived a good long life, and I've got plenty of things I could share, but I just thought I would throw it open. I don't know if Lynn or Rose, if you feel that you want to share something at this point, please feel free.
I've always felt a connection to her as well. And one of the first spiritual books I read was Autobiography of a Yogi. And Yogananda talks about meeting her. And he said, I reread it last night. And he said the first time he saw her in person, there were 100 devotees standing around her. And she caught a glimpse of him and said something like, "Father, you're here." And she went to him and hugged him and put her head on his shoulder. And he was saying, and he had never met her before, so he was really surprised. But he said that she just lived constantly in self-realization, constantly in connection with the divine. And so for many years, I've felt connected to her, and I'd love to hear your experiences with her, Helen.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking just then maybe we should, you know, go into her actual name, Anandamayi Ma, very loosely translates in English to bliss or joy permeated mother, Ma being term for mother. You both, I don't know, you probably know that anyway, but just in case anyone didn't know. And she, in a physical form, she was very much that, wasn't she? She was just. From the very first time I saw a photo of her, I was captivated. And I don't think I'd ever felt that kind of love for someone I didn't actually know, wasn't my own family at that time. You know, I was very new to the path and stumbled across accidentally, of course, not really, this picture of her in someone's house that I was in. And it was just this instant love affair. Like, who is that? Who is that person I need to? And it was a black and white photo, so I could tell that they were probably, it was taken a long time ago, but it was just joy and bliss just oozing out of her presence right through the photo into something in me that desperately needed that filling up, you know, some kind of sense of that. And it was quite a few years later before I actually learned anything about her, because, you know, as life moves on, you forget these things for a while until you're supposed to. But there was just always this connection. And I think I was saying before we started the recording on here that I know very little about her actual teachings, the way she actually taught, what she would say. And I've read very little about her. Most of my connection with her has been energetically. I didn't have a teacher I could sit with on my path until right at the very end. So I had to get to know a lot of the sages and saints that were already have taken Mahasamadhi, So she was a hero of mine, still is really. She broke every single rule. In the teachers, if there was a teacher's handbook, she broke every one of them. She wasn't at that time when she was teaching. Well, she wasn't really teaching; she was just sitting there being blissful, and whatever words came from that presence. But though she wasn't even supposed to be possible for a woman to become enlightened, at that point, that was the belief. And so, of course, she totally smashed through that. She allowed her husband to become her devotee, which again was a big, big no-no. She had two or three different religions sitting together in her satsangs, in her sangha around her. And again, that was a massive, it just was not done at the time, So I think I've always really, there's very few, I think Lynn, you and I have talked about, there's very few female teachers that really are very well known, and she was one of them. So she struck a place, and she had this rebellious quality, not just for the sake of causing trouble, but I'm not going to do it this way just because it's been done this way. And that just really had a place in my heart, that kind of. It is time to shake it up, and it gives me courage as a teacher as well, that maybe we're here to shake things up a bit. So, yeah, I mean, I could talk for hours, but yeah, maybe there's something you want to say around
I would like to add that you are shaking things up because many of the teachers that I've experienced in this lifetime have not really had personal relationships with those who follow them.
Thank
And you daily, on a daily basis, work to nurture these personal relationships. And I think that's really unheard of. I mean, of course, we use technology a lot, to communicate, and that's wonderful. But you have friends. I mean, you call us friends,
Our
other,
family, yeah, that's
yeah, in other
the family that you're
situations.
happy to sit around the dinner table with, right? Where it's not going to end up in a friction argument.
I'd say that it's like the intimacy that we have this incredibly intimate relationship with you, Helen, which is but can push buttons, or you could go, yeah, this is just what I want, as you
Probably
said.
both, right? Probably.
Yeah, bit of both, but certainly easier than other relationships I've had with teachers. And Lynn, you're sharing just then about Ananda, my rushing to Yogananda, intimately snuggling into him, and like the immediacy of energy moving, of divine energy moving, where you don't there's no split second of thought, but it's intimate. And some that way with connecting with Ananda Mahima or the divine feminine, it's kind of this finding the doorway to the heart, to the soul, that craving can be met. And she's so exquisitely beautiful. You kind of swim in her.
That's what I was trying to put words to before about this thing that just hit me the moment I saw it. Your heart just opens, and you have this total incapacity to guard it. She just doesn't care about any defenses, and whatever her presence is, it's just immediately connecting. And I remember reading that section in Autobiography of Yogi, and I could just imagine them, almost like children together, just in that innocent pureness of love.
I thought it was interesting that she called Yogananda father. I just thought that was really interesting. And I wanted to say, that you, Helen, your energy is very divine mother-like. And Rose and I were talking about that together, that this, that actually that I feel, even though you're my son's age, I feel that you have this mother quality about you. And of course you are a mother, but yeah, and I mean, I don't know if I'll continue calling you Helen even. I mean, I just feel like there's even another name coming up and I haven't pinpointed it yet, but you just have this mother energy, even though I could be your mother.
I think that's a large part of, I'm going to use the word teaching, but it's not really teaching. It's more like, I don't know, it's like, I don't know, I just feel like there's this urge to kind of hold you all somehow, you know, and just to, because I remember being just completely overwhelmed on the path, you know, myself, desperate, really feeling terrible and really struggling to find any motivation to go on, you know, various times stopping completely. So there's that urge to kind of guard against that, or, you know, try to wrap everyone up. And I've got myself in trouble before over mothering my own children. And, you know, when I was learning, still learning as teaching. So, yeah, that's very kind of you to say. Thank you.
Well, you're the one we come to with our problems. And then you give us all this love in return.
Thank you. Well, yeah, it's, Ma was a huge influence for me on that, to just, on that subject, to just be who I am, you know, to not censor myself in that way, that love is love and you can't, well, you can try to, but you can't really hold it back. You know, it's this kind of unstoppable force, isn't it? Infinitely gentle, but powerful at the same time.
I would love to hear more actually about just what you said then. I found for years when I was doing women's circles and what people would ask to say a few words, what would come through would be to have the real softness with my strength. And more you do the practice, there is this incredible energy, Shakti, available. And it's potent, so potent.
Yeah.
And so, but in a way, but when it becomes the nectar, when it becomes magical, both to feel ourselves is when it emerges with love, when it's compassion, when it's forgiveness. So what is a huge power, a huge Shakti, becomes something that keeps flowing, is accessible, is intimate. It wasn't very well expressed, but I would like your
it's very well expressed
on that. Because what do we do otherwise with this enormous energy that can kind of, it can be volcanoes, or it can be the tiniest gossamer wing of a dragonfly. Mm-hmm.
For me, that's what all of this is about. If I can't, no matter what I've realized here, if I can't connect with someone on a real heart space, which I guess is my kind of mothering in a way, then what's it all about? What's the point in any of this? If I could sit here and be as wise as anything, but if I can't connect with the next human being I meet, whether they're on the path or not, then... Yeah. To me, there isn't really, it's just, and that's for me how that Shakti, that Kundalini life force, whatever you want to call it, it just kind of stayed here for a while, built up with a deeper and deeper realization. Mm-hmm. And it just wanted to move outwards in a very powerful way. And it taught me, and Ma taught me, the difference between power and force. The true power is exquisitely gentle, unstoppable, but yet gentle. Mm-hmm. That it would do what it wanted to do, but not by pushing something out of the way. It just dissolved anything that was in its path in terms of resistance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we hear many miracles about Ma and the things that she did and things that happened around her. And to me, that was that Shakti just kind of doing what it wanted to do, you know, an impersonal, the word impersonal in our language, I think just, it has this very cold quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
But actually impersonal, it was like the most loving essence of all. And it was going to do what it's going to do. And all we can do is open up and go along with that for the ride, which just turns out to be miraculous and awe-inspiring and wonderful. And Ma really embodies that for me still, that just this unstoppable force of love. I've used the word force there, but power maybe is better, you know, that just melts anything that seems to get in its way.
Yeah. It's so helpful to have, I mean, for my path has been bhakti, it's been devotional, and now with you, it's opening up in a very different way. In the, if you for a label, the non-dual way, it's helping me access the spaciousness, the noumenon, whatever word one has, and in that there still is, but less of a terror of losing what I love in this human existence, which is my life as a mother, my connection with the beauty that's in the everyday. So having, bridging that gap into this, that to feel a sense that the infinite nothingness, creativity, potential, also has to find my link where I can feel the love there, whether that's by calling to the Divine Mother or a connection with you, or it's a very necessary part for me at this part of my path, and may continue to be so. I don't know, because that's still mystery, but that's really that heart connection that kind of like a mother would hold on to us and never let you go, really. They might let you stray quite far, but they've still got dinner on the table.
Yeah, and you come back home when you're ready, even if dinner's cold, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Funny.
Mm.
There's that was for me the role of these great sages and saints, you know, when I was really going through perhaps the lowest parts of my own journey, that they would embody or represent this place where everything would be okay, you know, where I was held already and where I didn't need to improve myself. I was already accepted. And they, of course, the infinite is invisible until it appears as a form, but it was obvious to me through certain beings that there would be this capacity to change the influence the manifestation, what was going on around them, that they just had this immense power to soothe anything and anyone that came within their vicinity, you know. So that Ma was like that, you know. People would, I don't know whether you've heard the stories, people would come and one story in particular that really troubled me when I was seeking, but really later made sense, was I remember reading that once one of her devotees came to her and his wife had passed away. I don't know if you've heard this story. And he was distraught, obviously, from where he was at. And he went to Ma for comfort and she just started laughing really loudly. And she said, "Now you're one step closer to God." And of course, there's a separate person who I thought I was. How cold is that? That's just terrible. You know, it's but later as I looked at that again, I thought, wow, what an absolutely amazing act of compassion and love to be brave enough to do that. I mean, obviously she wasn't choosing her actions, she just happened that way, but such a powerful embodiment of love to be able to say even this is held completely and loved by who you really are, you know. It's there's a place where even this is okay, you know. Of course there's emotions or whatever, but and that was that mothering, nurturing presence that I so desperately needed at the time. And I see it in a lot of beings being seeking or searching for so long, but from a place of being not good enough, and that we've had this long, arduous journey that's got us really nowhere. And sometimes people just need that, don't that kind of loving embrace.
You said on your thread, the WhatsApp thread, when you asked us if we wanted to talk, and I was like, yes, I want to hear these stories more than anything. Like, you know, just every part of my being wants to hear these stories. And you shared how when she came to you, she was incredibly playful.
Yes. Yeah. She continues to help me. And today's been, it's of course perfect that we're meeting today, because I've just been laughing the whole day, you know. And Ma was always epitome of joy. Krishna too, you know, and I'm going to meet with Anish and talk about Krishna and Babaji. Ma was this, for me, this whirlwind that moved into my life to just shake everything up, as we were saying, and not take myself seriously so much, which I needed at that point. I was so serious. I suppose we all are. It might be hard to imagine now, you know, knowing me now, but so much effort to try to get somewhere, and she just kind of rolled into town energetically and said, just, you know, forget all of that. It's just come and play. And whenever she's around, the birds start singing, you know, and there's all these lovely little signs. Sometimes there's this sweetest, almost like vanilla cherry sort of fragrance that sometimes comes, that it's just, and of course nobody else can smell it, so I feel like a complete loony with that smell, you know, but I've learned now what it means, you know, and I just, there's this smile in my heart that just, you know, gets bigger and bigger until I have to stop doing anything sensible for a while. And a lot of teaching as well from her, not in words, but in experience, about when something seems to go wrong, it's really not something going wrong. It's something going quite right, but I haven't seen the whole picture yet. There'd be this something happened in my life that seemed to go wrong, and there'd just be this giggle, like almost like a childish laughing, you know, childlike rather, not childish. And I just knew from that she was just saying, okay, you haven't seen really what's going on here. And then of course something else would happen, and you say, oh, that was why this happened, you know. And so, gosh, so many things. She sometimes when I spend a lot of time thinking about her, if I'm taking a photograph, there'll be strange lights or things in the photograph as well, you know. And I actually saw some pictures taken by devotees years and years ago where they were talking about her, and there's an appearance of a shape, like a light shape, a light body, in the photo as well. I know she likes to photo bomb, let's just say. Yeah, it's mostly what she continues to teach me is that joy is perhaps the most powerful teaching of all, you know, that joy can be a way of life rather than a feeling. It's not really a feeling, it's a a way of being.
That's the huge one. It's like being fully embodied, doing all the, I don't know, I have the sense that we do all the work we're doing with whatever help, you know, we're blessed to have to work through our stuff, to become more free, to become fully back into this yeah. world, and then be able to play, to be able to have joy, to be able to, like, go, you know, like, it would be like the most, it will be, I hope, like the most extraordinary journey, and one couldn't wish to be anywhere else.
Well, Well, it's already happening, isn't it? You're already having more fun. You're already taking yourself less seriously and the journey.
Yeah.
And that's the fundamental thing that I've picked up is this journey goes onwards in the body, at least, you know, until the body goes. And it's not about reaching anywhere. It's about how much fun am I having and am I making a difference along the way? That's really all we could ever, or as Ram Dass would say, we're just walking each other home, you know. And maybe having a laugh as we do that. And of course, there's times when we have some strong negative emotion or something, and we don't feel so joyful, but it's still there in the background. It might not be expressing itself outwardly. Or if you're around someone who's really in a lot of pain emotionally, physically, you're not just going to laugh that off and say it doesn't matter. Of course, the compassion will take another form then of more loving than joyful, perhaps in an outer way, but it's still there. It's still, I'm just here to experience everything I can in this particular vehicle for as long as it lasts, and eternally awe-inspired at the ways that the Divine Mother can show up as our experience, the people that we meet and the connections that we make, which I think is what's so beautiful about this family that we've got. It's just the connections are ever deepening, aren't they? And that is, to me, that's what it's all about, you know, embodying that presence.
Yeah, I think that Ma just 100% lived that divine energy. Like, I even read that she wouldn't feed herself, that her devotees would prepare the food and sit next to her and spoon feed her, or she wouldn't even eat. And Yogananda said that she it appeared that she couldn't even tell the difference if she was eating dessert or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. She just was not into food at all. She was just in ecstasy, spiritual ecstasy, all the time.
There are times when it's harder to notice what the body needs. You know, sometimes when that ecstasy really takes a hold, it can be challenging to stay in touch with what the body needs. And I can understand completely why some beings would just say, okay, I'm going to leave the body, you know. I remember reading, not that, you know, that's what I'm recommending or anything. I'm actually having the most fun I've ever had in this life experience that we're calling being human. I finally feel like I've got a handle on what's going on, you know, slightly. So I remember reading a story about Ma, again, about food. And I can't remember exactly where it was, but she hadn't eaten anything in about 3 days or something, and everyone was starting to really worry, all the devotees around her. And they finally got her to eat something, and they were saying, you should eat more. And they were feeding her, as you said. And in the end, to show them, she went through the entire contents of the kitchen in the ashram and ate it all in one sitting, everything. And they were all, again, frantically worried, saying, you're going to be really ill now, that you shouldn't do this, you know. And of course, absolutely nothing happened to her. And it was a beautiful teaching in itself, that her body was existing on something quite different, directly perhaps from prana, life force, shakti, whatever we're calling it. And that's common for many beings. You know, the actual need for food intake becomes a lot less. But she completely embodied that, you know, and just kind of showed everyone, look, I'm just going to literally ate the whole storehouse. I had nothing. And everyone was amazed, you know, thought she was going to be really ill afterwards, but she just kind of smiling and laughing.
Helen, you've mentioned that that on this, use the word journey, but for you, your need for sleep is diminishing. Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah, it's I used to be a grumpy old bear if I didn't get 9 hours at least, 9 hours solid sleep. Now it's somewhere between 5 and 6, sometimes much less, but usually around that. And it's, I think it's quite, I mean, as you move away from thoughts, believing thoughts at least, there's that's because that's what taxes the body, that's what it needs to repair itself from. You're not believing thoughts, the body's not having to function on adrenaline the whole time, fight or flight. There's a lot more repairing and a lot less damaging of the tissues and the cells. It's toxins and things like that that build up in the cells from fear, adrenaline, and shame, guilt, all of those things, which the body can handle, of course. But if you're not believing thoughts, then the body doesn't need so much time to what gets us through the waking state is a few moments of deep sleep we have without any thought activity at nighttime. So if that's going on during the waking state, there's really not that drain on the body. And it will just take itself to bed when it needs to and wake up when it needs to, you know. So it's
So it
same
sounds
with
like
food as well. Just go ahead, sorry.
the more in tune we are with divine energy, the less we need of these food and sleep and whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember reading about certain saints and sages that would go years and years without eating anything and thinking, how is that even possible? But and that's not my experience, but I do know there's days when I do forget to eat and I have to remind myself. And these days I probably eat once, maybe twice a day if I've got a lot of activity, but it's gradually diminishing. Because the fuel source is more direct, you know, we're eating this food and we're sleeping to regenerate the body, but we are then we are directly able to use the prana as it's coming in through the breath much more efficiently. You'll find that as well, probably, that the your breathing is gradually becoming much better, you know, fuller, deeper, richer. Again, the effects of fear just. It's very common when you read about people like Ma.
Excuse me just a minute.
No worries. So, do you have anything you want to share there, Rose?
I was just thinking how I spoke very sort of abundantly just now about being really present in this life and enjoying everything in this life. And that is happening more, but it's still with, and then we will comment about using energy, you know, and even when we've been doing our zooming out, we use more energy when we zoom in onto something than when we zoom out. And my experience, so my experiences, which is all I can speak from, is my known sense at the moment with occasional memories. In loving this world of Shakti, this world of form, is still predominantly from, there's more doing in it. So it will be, you know, I have a flavor, I have a sense of the delight that is there. And I'm really open to more way. I mean, it's like you can't describe what an orange tastes like. You can't describe certain things, but some things really drop in, and in some way, I don't work in a very linear way. I don't work from here, I work from here in my body. Sometimes things drop in when one hears stories or sees pictures of saints or has something, and they're openings into that more, really, that Shakti. But my sense of my kind of window into the where I can access the divine. It's more like this sense of very, very spacious, very light mothering. So if I had my arms very wide, they'd be super wide, and just being there, being present, being kind of watching the child that might be squabbling or this that might be going on. And it's very much a smile. It's like a smile that I can see in my, I can kind of see with my heart. And it's this space, this held spaciousness. The quality is feminine. It's not sweet, it's not this, it's just there.
Mm-hmm.
There and loving and present. It's not even forgiving, because that would infer there's something to be forgiven, or the fact that forgiveness is an action. But that quality to me is also very much the divine.
It's inherently nurturing, isn't it? That just allowing form to be as it absolutely is already, whatever that is. It's just you can't do that without nurturing. Just how you are right now is completely how you're supposed to be. And so much so that I couldn't even want to change anything. I couldn't even perceive of wanting to change anything. That's the nurturing right there, isn't it? That kind of intense, I can't find the words right now, but a vote of absolute confidence in who we are, in our humanity, especially. Because we might come to recognize I am the infinite reality, but might still be doubting our current expression in some way as a human being. You know, this needs fixing and that needs changing and whatever. That divine presence, that mothering, it's just completely, but it just ground to a halt. There's no way for me to want to change myself in that presence at all, as that presence. And it just stops anything like that in its tracks.
And that's not a linear looking. But if I try to find Alice, like to look for her, like more like an object or something linear, that I can end up in separation or in it doesn't work. But when the, it's like when I open up to this much more spacious, within that there can be a sense of color or caress or real sweetness. Yeah. That's a real grace, but it's an opening more. Yeah.
And Ma, to me, she also taught me about bliss. That bliss. Srinivasa Gaurata Maharaj was I remember reading his quote. I said it, my experience is everything is bliss, but the desire for bliss creates a whole universe of pain. That quote puzzled me for a long time. And then I came across Ma's picture again at some point, and that's it. That bliss is like condensed, crystallized nurturing. That intense feeling, that sweet feeling that everything is absolutely okay right now.
Yeah.
It was like just coursing through my veins the first time I ever meditated. Mm-hmm. I had this try before you buy intensity of bliss. You know, this is why it's worth doing the work type of thing.
Yeah.
And that's what Ma embodies for me is this, the bliss permeating, whether it's perfect, isn't it? It's just actually absolutely saturated with, and then a good example of this is what someone looks like when they've totally let this take over their whole existence. This is what they, not look like physically, but although she, of course, was beautiful in the physical form, she just embodies beauty on every way that you could perceive her and can perceive her still. And that presence is, when you open your heart to that, that's what I got from what you were saying. There's just this immediate hug, embrace of just this absolutely exquisiteness that's just totally sumptuous and delicious, and none of those words do it,
it just is. And I'm stopping, I would have stopped it more quickly before, more fear would have come in, something would have come in, or I would have kind of been, had half an eye on the future, on taking myself out as this present, and then, oh god, what am I going to do then, and something would have kiboshed it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, that's happening.
There's this beautiful point, though, where you can't stop it. Yeah. You don't want to, and then you don't have the capacity to. Mm. You just can't muster up the energy to close up again.
Mm-hmm.
And it might, just feel Ma's laughter right now. It's like, why would you want to do that anyway? You know, some kind of, you came here to play, let's play, you know, let's see what this looks like, you know, in terms of, and of course there are times when we have to be more serious, but as we were saying before, that is for me what she really represents. It's like there's always more joy, isn't there, to be had, to be felt.
Do we have to be more serious?
Sometimes I think it's a helpful, in my experience, if you get too joyful around people who think they're separate beings, it tends to freak them out a little bit. You know, that they're only used to, and of course it's the generalization that there's beings who aren't awake that are very willing to play in surprising places. I think too much joy expressed outwardly sometimes can make people feel a little uncomfortable because it reminds them that they're not able to let that come to the surface in themselves.
Mm-hmm. Can you be a little more specific? An example?
Let's take an ordinary. So we sat around the table, my family and I, my biological family, at least. And my sister and I love to laugh, absolutely. When we get together, since I've worked through a lot of my anger and things like that, you know, because before we used to rub each other up the wrong way completely. And one of the beautiful things is we've been able to go away on vacation together, to actually spend time together, which would have really been something I wouldn't have looked forward to. So when we get together, after a certain amount of time, we just start laughing. And laughing, you know, when you're laughing so hard about the smallest thing. I mean, the other day we were eating and we had some garden peas and somebody's pea launched off the plate across the room. And that was it. That was enough. We just started laughing. And as we kind of got more to the point where we didn't even know what we're laughing about. I mean, I'm assuming you've experienced that, where it just starts with something and ends up just being this movement of joy and fun. Mm-hmm. I noticed other people around the table were kind of feeling a little, there was an attempt to start some normal conversation to calm it down. That they're used to, my mom and her husband are used to expressions of joy coming from me. They know I'm very happy. They don't know why, but I've seen that more pronounced, you know, playing with kids in the supermarket. I was in the supermarket about an hour before we got online, just playing with this child, you know, around the shelves, and they were doing this and I was doing this, and parents were laughing, but then you could see this kind of shutter come down. Okay, this woman's being a bit too friendly now, let's move along, type of thing. You know, she's obviously taken some drugs or something, you know. So, I mean, I don't know what they were thinking, but you could see at some point this resistance come back up, and it's okay, totally. You feel, you meet people who play with you in the weirdest of places, and I'm sure you've started to experience that anyway, but that opportunity is there. With animals, with nature, that, you know, everything in the animal kingdom will play with you if you're in that mood. A surprising amount of human beings as well.
I might have shared with you before that when my father was dying, my sister and I were there beside him. And just as soon as he passed, my sister started crying almost hysterically, and I felt the energy there and all the ancestors, and the energy was heavy and thick. And my sister looked at me and asked, why was I laughing and smiling? And I was offending her in that moment. And so I went down to the restroom and I looked in the mirror and I had this huge smile on my face. I didn't even know it, but it was the, you know, it was the divine energy that just filled the house. And so I know what you're talking about. It's, you can't control it.
I found that there are certain ways sometimes, like last time I was at a funeral, I ended up crying a lot because not out of grief for the person. I was actually, you know, really, really happy for the person that left their body because you've been in a lot of physical pain and it wasn't going to get any better, you know. So it was a relief, a huge relief. And I could see, experience, feel all the beings that had gathered out of form to welcome, you know, that transition and guide that person on through their onward journey. But I remember crying a lot, and it was some kind of response that happened because everyone else was just absolutely, there were a lot of beings in that gathering that physically didn't know how they were going to manage without that person. You know, it was that their whole life was built around that person. Now they had to reinvent themselves again without that, you know, the relationships that. So, and of course they taught to believe that that being is gone, can't see them anymore, they've disappeared. So it was this overwhelming compassion that just started coming out as tears, a deep wish that they would be able to see what I'm seeing and experience what I'm experiencing. And of course everyone else thought I was crying because I was grieving like they were. So it worked, you know, and I didn't do anything to disturb that illusion. But there are ways that it will temper itself like that joy. But I've come to realize over the time, since deeply sort of waking up, that if you smiled or laughed when he passed, then somebody must have needed to see that, even if it was only you, or maybe even your sister on some level needed to see that that was a possible response, a response of joy and freedom and end of suffering physically. You know, it's, there's always a reason for it, even if we never know what that is. The self never does anything wrong in that way, does it? It's spontaneously appropriate for everyone.
It almost felt like being a channel, you know, of just because there was so much energy, it just rushed through and was really thrilling. And it was the strangest, you know, it's not what I anticipated at all. When that moment came,
once that being is out of physical pain, the actual experience can be very peaceful and soothing, and it can also be the exact opposite. You know, some transitions are, especially if the person is scared, it can be very much opposite. But surprisingly, you find joy in surprising places, really, especially when you're not believing your thoughts so much. It's, you know, if there is a message, I think that Ma would, and I don't want to speak for her, but if there is a message that she would want to give us, it would be that, surely, that find the places that you can play and have joy, and those that want to connect with you. And yeah. Wonderful. Is there anything else you want to share about Ma, either of you? If anything you feel moved to say.
I'm going to connect.
I'm sorry, Rose, go ahead.
I am looking forward to connecting with her more.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I can hear this clapping and joy.
Thank you, Helen.
Is this image of a bird just soaring on the winds, you know, just soaring in the sense of freedom. It's an overwhelming feeling.
I want to thank Ma for coming to us, sharing with us, and for teaching you and us through you.
And I get the feeling, of course, that we've only just begun to explore what joy is, you know. That would be lovely. We had, I was telling someone this morning, we were talking on a meeting When we, Rose, when you and I were at the retreat, the Earth Spirit retreat last year, we just had that. It was supposed to be a silent sitting where everyone just ended up absolutely. I think it was Amy that started laughing and everyone else, because there'd been a lot of negative emotion released. We all sat down then into meditation and somebody just started laughing and the whole half an hour was just this constant explosion of joy. It was just utterly beautiful, and looking forward to that again. Well, thank you so much for being here with me today. Let me just change this here so I can see you both. There we go. I think we've somehow managed to celebrate Ma in the middle of all this, all that she is and represents in us, and it's beautiful, isn't it? Wonderful.
Yes, thank you. Thank you,
Yeah.
Helen.
Thank you. And let's see what happens from here, what joy unfolds. Thank you.
I'm excited. Thank you. Thank
Thank
you.
you. Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Thank you.